The topic of today's lecture is recognition. Those who had the pleasure of attending Personnel Economics 1 course have already learned a little bit about recognition. Today's lecture is actually drawn to a large extent on the last semester's recognition lecture, yet there are some new things here. So it's not a complete repetition. Those who are new to this course will find it rather interesting, I am sure. So an apt quotation for today's lecture comes from a lady called Mary Kay Ash, who appears to have said, "There are two things people want more than sex and money. It's recognition and praise." So never mind money, never mind sex. What you want is recognition and praise. Is it true? I'm not sure. I'm not even sure that she actually said this. This quotation is attributed to her. But as today's lecture will show, there is some element of truth in this statement, in the sense that the provision of recognition, which sometimes happens in a strategic way, can affect people's performance, even in the presence of rather powerful incentives that are independent of recognition. So to make it, you know, to actualize this example, imagine someone working under very powerful monetary incentives. So you would expect them to work very hard at the point when the marginal benefit of their effort is equal to the marginal cost of their effort. And yet, if you randomly select these hardworking guys into the recognition and no recognition condition, if you do a sort of experiment on top of an experiment, you'll find an additional performance increase of the people who are in the recognition condition. So it's not going to be very small. It's not going to be very long-lived. You can't motivate people to work hard for a long time by telling them how great they are. Show me the money. But at least in the short run, and at least for some people, recognition works. And given that recognition is essentially free, by giving recognition, you're making money from the air. Now, how to make money from the air, we will learn in this lecture. So, a lot of people like to make money from the air of recognition. A lot of firms, really a large share of firms, surveyed by one of the very popular HR agencies. This is the World at Work survey. Report that they have recognition as part of their HR practice. So recognition comes in different shapes and forms. The most popular one, of course, is this Employee of the Year title. But you know, recognition may also come in the form of public praise. Recognition may also come in the form and be part of the regular performance assessment exercise. So not only do you assess performance and make your administrative decisions based on performance assessment results, you actually make some of these performance assessment results public and provide recognition this way. So not only do you learn that you belong to the top 5%, also the rest of your firm learns that you belong to the top 5%, and it gives you a good feeling, and you care about your status, everybody starts respecting you, you want things to continue this way, so you work hard next year and in anticipation and wanting to belong to the top 5% of employees. Now, what do people get from recognition? People get money from recognition. Sure, right? The more recognition you get, the more, of course, stochastically more, you can get of various other goodies, like wage. You become more employable if you have more accolades after your name. You will feel better physically as well as emotionally. And of course, the psychological benefits of recognition are important. recognition is sometimes useful for career promotions, getting, you know, other aspects of employment, which are not necessarily cash related but are material. However, surprisingly, in a non-negligible number of cases, you have recognition which involves absolutely no monetary rewards, right? So you just get this Employee of the Year title, and it doesn't give you any, you know, it doesn't give you any wage increase, it doesn't give you any promotion, nothing. Huh? So how do you, what do you make out of this result? 40%, in 40% of cases, according to this World at Work survey, people don't get any money from recognition. So two questions. First, what is the effect of recognition in situations when recognition has no money behind it? And second question, I would even say more interesting, is if it's totally useless, why do so many firms so frequently offer recognition that doesn't go together with any material reward? It turns out that recognition has incentive effects, effects similar to the effects of incentives. There is a study, there is one study by Stephen Levitt and co-authors. You know Stephen Levitt, the author of Freakonomics. They looked at, they compared the effect of recognition on school children's performance, school children's academic performance, with the effects of monetary incentives. And through these comparisons, there are multiple comparisons, what they found out was that the effect of recognition, basically having your name on a big board saying, look, this is our best pupil in the school, produces an incentive effect which is commensurate, the same in magnitude, as if these people were promised $20 reward for passing a particular test, right? For school people in one of the most disadvantaged areas of Chicago where they run their experiments, it's a lot of money. So recognition is potentially very powerful. Now, so, and that makes recognition a very interesting proposition for firms that don't like powerful incentives. Just to revise, to take this opportunity to revise some of the chapters, some of the difficult chapters in the course that we have done so far, there are various reasons why powerful incentives may not be suitable. And all these reasons we've studied earlier on in the course. If you can't measure performance very precisely, you have a huge sigma squared. Have huge sigma squared, you can't offer a huge beta. Can't offer huge beta, you're not going to get a lot of effort. Yeah? So imprecise performance measurement reduces the effectiveness of incentives, and therefore firms that can't measure performance very precisely don't offer a lot of incentives. What they still can do is they all can offer recognition and see whether it plays or not, and it does. High risk, multitasking, this is the equal compensation principle, as you may recall. If you have two different tasks that are observed with varying, with different degrees of precision, then you have to reward the outcomes of these tasks equally on the margin, which means that your optimal strength of incentives is determined by the least well-measurable task. And that, of course, makes incentives not as powerful and not as attractive as a business proposition. Dysfunctional behavioral responses where people sabotage or, you know, buy some points to look better. We spoke about it last week, and choking under pressure. So there are many reasons why incentives may not be a very good idea and firms don't practice monetary incentives. What is the share of firms that practice incentives anyway? About 25%, about 25%, not 95%. What is the share of firms that practice recognition? 80%. So it means, right, that the applicability of recognition as an HR practice that can produce incentive effect is a lot wider than the applicability of monetary incentives. So there are many reasons why you do recognition. And these reasons, we're not going to study them all, we're just going to review them. Improves self-esteem, drives performance, engages employees, draw your own reason. You know this management style. Yeah, it's engaging, but intellectually not very deep. Focuses on desired outcomes, increases morale, derives awareness of your brand internally. I mean, I would love to see, other than this nice picture, I would love to see really, you know, hard scientific evidence for the effectiveness of recognition in engaging employees and enforcing positive working culture. What I have seen so far is some evidence, not very consistent and not very strong, but some very interesting evidence that recognition actually drives performance. And today's lecture is going to be about recognition as a driver of performance. And whatever drives performance is of our immediate interest in this course, because remember, the big question before us in this course is how to motivate people. Recognition is one such way. So let us review theories, theoretical arguments, loosely collected here with little pretense for systematization. Let us review the theories that logically predict recognition to have a bearing on people's performance. What makes it even more interesting is that all these theories work without necessarily recognition being connected with any material rewards. So a very popular view in the literature, and we will see evidence to the validity of this view, is that recognition works, recognition affects performance because people have concerns for their status. We all want to be among the best in what we do, right? People compete for championships, people compete for prizes, people compete for recognition. Recognition makes you feel good. There is a paper in Nature that looks at health, like medical health outcomes of apes. You know who apes are, often? Of apes at the top and at the bottom of the hierarchy. Apes are hierarchical animals. Now, the apes at the top of the hierarchy, those who have very high status, are much healthier than apes at the bottom of the hierarchy. So it makes biological sense to care for status. Now, recognition leads to enhanced status within a group. You know, you can beat yourself in the chest saying I'm the best, but prove it. Recognition puts a certificate on you that you are the best or among the best. So recognition, from that point of view, is desirable. Recognition is a manifestation of the credibility of your claim to be the best in the group. And of course, being the best in the group and having people believe that you're the best in the group has significant benefits. So recognition works by confirming high status of the individuals who receive recognition. Therefore, it is desirable, and therefore people spend effort to win recognition. Now, that's one view, and what this view implies is that recognition works best when it's announced. You know? If you have a tournament of some sort, competition, which is not announced, you're not prepared. But when it's announced, you exert effort in advance of this competition so that you could increase your chance of winning this competition and getting recognition. So announced recognition, such as Employee of the Year title, or the Best Lecturer title, or a Nobel Prize winner, they work, they affect people's performance by activating status concerns. There's another view, another reason, independent of status concerns, that through which recognition affects performance. This reason is more subtle. It's less intuitive, and yet empirically it works. The reason has to do with conformity to performance norm. Right? So we are group animals. We can't exist on our own. We need to form groups. We need to form societies. Right? So if we live outside societies, we can't talk, we can't read, we can't write. Now, in every society, there are norms. Norms are necessary to ensure social cohesion. So there are behavioral norms, there are performance norms, there are sometimes even ideological norms. Some norms are written. Some norms are written. For instance, somewhere there's a sign that you shouldn't bring any food in this room. So even if you think otherwise, you have information about the norm. Sure, Caroline, of course you can bring an apple in this room. I didn't mean it. Yes. Let's say smoking. Yeah. But other norms are unwritten. And you need to research, you need to find out what the norm is. Now, how do you find out what the norm is? You talk to people. You need to know people, to talk to them, to find out what the norm is. And when you talk to people, you only get an imperfect signal of what the norm is. You know? So, but then you have a recognition. It emerges all of a sudden that this particular person is the employee of the year. And you think to yourself, okay, here's a group of 10 people, and here's the employee of the year, must be the best of the 10 in terms of relevant performance characteristics, in terms of the performance characteristics that the firm values. So you learn, recognition is given to top 10% people in my group. Do I belong to this top 10%? If I am the employee of the year, I learn that yes, I do belong to the top 10% of the people in the group. And if my performance norm is such that I want to belong to the top, say, 20% people in the group, you know, I don't want to be necessarily the best, but I don't want to be below the top 20%, for instance, right? Then by receiving recognition, I immediately learn. What do I learn? That I fulfill the performance norm, because I'm, in fact, contrary to my expectations, I'm top 10% rather than 20. Now, top 20%, let's stick with that, but I don't receive the employee of the year, all is not lost, right? There's still a probability that I fulfill the norm. I could be, you know, better than 20th percentile, but worse than 10th percentile. Or better than 80th percentile, but worse than 90th percentile, depending on where you count from. Am I fulfilling the norm? Yes. And am I being recognized? No. But through the process of Bayesian updating, which I'm sure has become your methodological favorite since the Career Concerns lecture, you can actually update your beliefs about the likelihood with which you fulfill the norm. Exactly how it works, I will show you later in the lecture using illustrations, using some very simple maths. But to cut the long story short, recognition gives you an update of your personal subjective belief as to how likely it is that you fulfill a certain norm. In particular, those who receive recognition update their beliefs about fulfilling the norm upwards. So you thought that there was X percent probability that you fulfilled the norm, you receive the recognition, it mathematically X becomes higher. So you thought there was 80% probability with which you fulfilled the norm, you receive recognition, now this probability became 100%. So you have a positive update. If you didn't receive recognition, you believed that you were 80% likely to fulfill the norm, you don't belong to the top 10%, you could still belong to the between top 10 and top 20%, but it is less likely than you thought before. So it's not 80% now, it's let's say 50%. It's less likely than I thought. And if it's less likely than you thought, then the marginal benefits of effort to achieve the norm become all of a sudden higher. So you work harder when you don't receive recognition. So the theory of conformity to performance norm, which we will review today, predicts that recognition is a core signal of where you stand in the performance distribution. And as much as people care about their position in the performance distribution, It creates different behavioral responses depending on whether you are recipient or not recipient of recognition. If you are recipient of recognition, you get a positive update of the probability that you fulfill the norm. So what you do, you reduce your effort. You rest on your laurels, as it were, like the people who are at the end of their tenure in the career concerns model. If you receive a signal that you don't receive recognition, you update your probability of fulfilling the norm downwards, so you start working harder. There we are. So that's conformity to performance norm. That's the sort of empirical signature of this theory, that recipients and non-recipients of recognition will react very, very differently to the act of public recognition. This mechanism, conformity to performance norms, works best when recognition is not announced. Why does it work best when recognition is not announced? Well, that's not quite true. It is true that it works best when recognition is not announced and when there is no other information that you can use to learn about your relative position within the group. If, for instance, you could see your performance rankings, then you don't need recognition because you already know with certainty where you belong in the performance distribution and you've known about it before, so whether you receive recognition or not shouldn't matter at all. And it doesn't. Ask Susanna Neckermann. So, but when you don't really know where you stand in the performance distribution, you know, you haven't had time to find out, there are unfamiliar people to you, it's a new environment to you, you don't really know, then receiving or not receiving recognition really is the only source of information about your relative performance from which you derive inferences with respect to your standing. These inferences are not perfect, yet they are informative and they affect your effort. Now, there are a couple of other mechanisms, reciprocity and conditional altruism. People are reciprocal, which means that, you know, if you scratch my back, I scratch yours. You give me pleasure by saying how good I am. I give you pleasure by working harder. You give me pleasure, you give me a displeasure of saying how bad I am. I give you the displeasure of working less hard. Conditional altruism is a theoretically possible mechanism. How it works is that recognition in itself is not important at all. So we're not in the business of status concerns and we're not in the business of conformity to performance norm. We are in the business of learning about what sort of principle you have. Caring or careless? Caring principle cares about employees. And the fact of receiving recognition may be construed as a signal of the altruistic attitude of the principle. Because, you know, let's face it, recognition is free, but it's not quite free. It still takes time to, you know, write the speech and print the Employee of the Year sign, etc., etc., right? So if you see employers going to such lengths, you may construe that they are caring about you. It's an exotic theory. So I use it, I give it for completeness, but no one has ever seen evidence for recognition to work through the mechanism of conditional altruism. Here is a summary of the various theoretical predictions, of the predictions of the various theories, I should say. Predictions of the various theories as to the effect of recognition on performance. This table comes from a very famous paper by Christiane Bradler, Robert Dürr, Susanna Neckermann, who I'm sure you know, and Arjen Non. Well, Susanna is a former colleague of mine, and I really admire her work, and I cited some of it. They survey the various theories, and they make predictions with respect to the performance responses of the recipients and non-recipients of recognition, depending on which channel the recognition operates through, and depending on how abundant, how generous recognition is. So here, everybody receives recognition. It's like the, Jugendliga football tournament where everybody gets a medal. Well, my children go to these, and everybody gets a medal, no matter how, no matter what the score is. So this is recognition for all. This is recognition. This is the moderate level of recognition. You are not too stingy with recognition, and yet you are not too generous with recognition. So, and this is when recognition is extremely extremely scarce. When only one person receives recognition. So when you have recognition for all, everybody receives recognition. Everybody is a recipient of recognition. Never mind status, because status is not an issue here. Everybody receives recognition. You can't tell from recognition whether you are the worst or the best or in the middle. But it gives you a feeling of a warm glow, and you are smiling and you are happy. It gives you psychological comfort. So the reciprocity channel would predict everybody to respond positively to the fact of receiving recognition. When you have scarcer recognition, only some people, some of the best people receive recognition, then the effect starts to differ. Reciprocity predicts that the recipients of recognition will really oblige and, will really be obliged and work harder. So hence this plus sign in front of the R. But the non-recipients of recognition will, you know, they won't receive recognition, so they won't be obliged to work harder. You should say, well, why wouldn't they freak out and get disappointed and withdraw their effort? Well, notice that this is reciprocity. This is not fairness concerns. This is not distributional concerns, right? So people don't care about others in the world of reciprocity. People care about how the principal treats them. And if the principal treats them well, they respond well. If the principal does not treat them well, they just don't respond. Hence the zero there. Now, when the recognition is extremely rare, right, then the recipients of recognition realize that they are the only ones receiving this recognition, which means that the principal is really thinking very highly of them, so they work harder. The non-recipients couldn't care less. Altruism, everybody works harder regardless of whether you're a recipient or non-recipient of recognition. This is a bit funny, but that's what the theory predicts. And why is there no separate effect for recipients and non-recipients? There's no separate effect for recipients and non-recipients because conditional altruism, according to conditional altruism theory, recognition works as a signal of a certain type of the principle. So whether or not you receive recognition yourself does not matter. All that matters is you see the principle doing certain things. And from these things you learn, you receive a signal that is informative of the principle's type. And therefore, everybody responds positively with their effort. Any questions so far? As a practice question, consider why conditional altruism predicts a stronger performance effect when recognition is more abundant than when recognition is scarce. Let's move to conformity. Conformity. When recognition is abundant, so everybody receives recognition, there are only recipients. And guess what? They don't care. Why not? Remember, conformity to the performance norm works as a mechanism. It works by revealing information about your relative status in a group. When everybody receives recognition, no such information is revealed. You still don't learn about your relative status in the group. When recognition is less generous, then you learn whether you are here or there. And that creates opposite reactions for the arguments that I explained a few minutes ago. Now, when you are moving to the scarcer recognition, the reactions are still opposite, but they are smaller in magnitude. As a practice question, think about why they are smaller in magnitude. Okay, now, what is the empirical evidence behind the various channels? Let's start with status concerns. What the status concerns theory predicts? Recognition, when it is a tool to validate your high status, If you want high status, you want to win recognition, and so you work harder when there is a possibility to receive recognition than when there is no possibility to receive recognition. Here is Michael Kosfeld and Susanna Neckermann. Remember Kosfeld, the hidden cost of control paper, motivated by the video cameras at Lidl? Remember this? No. Oh, probably it was a different course, sorry. So Michael Kosfeld, famous German economist, they wrote a paper where they ran an experiment in Switzerland, just next door. They hired volunteers to help send information letters to Swiss municipalities. There are lots of municipalities in Switzerland, and they wanted the volunteers to find out the address of the municipality and put this address on the envelope and send the "please give us money" letter to the various municipalities in Switzerland. And this was a one-off job. There was hourly rate, no performance incentives at all. What is so interesting about this experiment, the interesting thing was that there was a treatment and control group, and in the treatment group, they told the participants in the treatment group that, you know, guys, the two most productive of you will receive a congratulatory card, will receive basically a piece of carton where the director of this local charity organization will say thank you very much for your wonderful work. So that was the only treatment that they did. Now, as a practice question, think about how and why this experimental design relates to status concerns. Why is this an experiment about status concerns? What are the results? Positive effect of the award treatment on the various measures of performance. So you are sending more letters per minute, and you also work harder. This is a measure of how difficult it is to find the address of every community on the internet, and how difficult it is to, you know, do the sending of the letter. And on both these performance indicators, people in the award treatment perform significantly better, right? Average performance increases by between 11 and 14%, which, given the negligible costs of this thank you card, is a massive, massive performance increase. You know, how do you make an extra 11% productivity from the thin air? You have to offer recognition in a way that triggers status concerns. The most interesting part of this research is not the average effect of the award treatment on the effort. The most interesting part is actually this table. It shows the results of the treatment by percentile of the productivity distribution. So this is the quantile regression estimates. Find out what the quantile regression is from Wikipedia. So the average effect estimated by quantile regression is positive but insignificant. Why is it significant here? Why is it not significant here but significant there? Because there are two different estimators. One is OLS and the other one is quantile regression. Now, if you look at the top 25% of people in terms of productivity, then you'll see a very massive effect. 18 percentage point difference in productivity between top 75 performers in the control group and the top 25 people in terms of productivity in the treatment group. The median effect is not there. The effect for the people at the bottom of the productivity distribution is not there. Question: why are the people at the top of the distribution more affected, more strongly affected by status concerns than the people at the bottom of the distribution? Any ideas? Yeah?
Because they have a higher chance to win the status?
Because people at the top of the distribution have a higher chance of winning the status. That's right, yes. So recognition offered on a competitive basis, they said only top two people will be recognized, and there were lots of participants. So it's competitive. When you offer incentives, any incentives, recognition, money, whatever, when you offer any incentives on a competitive basis, you should recall the tournament model in Personnel Economics 1. And the tournament model in Personnel Economics 1 tells you that when you have, in the world of tournaments, the high ability people react to tournaments more strongly than low ability people, because for high ability people, the chances of winning are higher. And you can immediately see this from the basic model of the tournament when you allow for different costs of effort. Okay, so, and the same happens with recognition, as if it were money, which of course it isn't. So, we know so far that status concerns are important. It's not exactly surprising, because I think we can all relate to the importance of status concerns, and we have done things for the sake of status concerns. What about other theoretical reasons why recognition matters for performance? My favorite is conformism, because it's sort of subtle, you know? It's hard to find, and yet it works. Here's a paper by Bradley, Durr, Neckermann, and Non. We worked on this, on the two papers on similar subjects at approximately the same time. So they published in Management Science, Nikki and I published in another journal. So in that paper, they hired people into the four conditions, one control condition and one and three treatment conditions. So the control condition was basically no recognition, just a boring job, doing some data entry, I think, and you just do your boring entry job. You receive hourly rate, so there's no incentives. It's a one-off job, no career concerns, nothing. But in the treatments, you have recognition to all. Recognition to the top three people in the group of eight, and recognition to the top one person in the group of eight, which happens after 2 hours of work and which is based on their performance during these 2 hours of work. Now, what distinguishes this study from Kosfeld and Neckermann? The most important thing that distinguishes these two studies is the fact that in Kosfeld and Neckermann, recognition was announced, and in Bradler and colleagues, recognition was not announced. And that makes a lot of difference, because remember, if you want to turn on status concerns, you have to make an announcement. You have to give people time to work hard and to try and win higher status afforded by recognition. But if you want to switch off the status concerns, you shouldn't announce recognition. You should do it in an unannounced way, so that the only value of recognition is the value in revealing, in a coarse, imperfect, but still informative way, some information about your relative standing on the within the distribution. And they varied the coverage of recognition. Why they do so? Well, when you give recognition to all, you offer a token treatment, but there's no substance in this treatment, is there? Because when you recognize everybody, no one learns anything about their relative status in the performance distribution. So to the extent to which this information is important for your effort, you should not expect any treatment effect in the treatment where recognition is given to all. When you reveal information, when you recognize the top three out of eight people, that's something. Right, it's top 37.5% that are recognized. So you can, depending on whether you are recognized or not, you can update your beliefs about the probability with which you fulfill performance norm. Now, and then there is top one. So only top one is recognized. You can also update your probability of fulfilling the norm, but you can do it less accurately. You can do it less well. Why? Extremely scarce recognition is not giving you a lot of information about how likely you are fulfilling the performance norm? Why is it the case? To give you an intuitive example, what's your name? Kim. Kim, I'm afraid you haven't won the Nobel Prize in economics this year. I'm sorry. Does it say anything about your relative position in the ability distribution of economics students?
Not really.
Not really, because it's so scarce that, you know, you don't want to be top 0.000001% in the distribution. Suppose you're happy with being, you know, top 20% of the distribution. And if you know who is top 0.001% of the distribution, it's not really very useful for you to know. So whereas when, on the other hand, you have a recognition given to the top 20% of the distribution and you're not there, this is a massive information update for you, because you thought you were in the top 20%, but you're not. Wow, the world is very different, and you react very strongly. So there's a non-linear relationship between the scarcity of recognition and the performance effects that this recognition turns on if it is to operate through the mechanism of conformity. If recognition is given to everybody, no one knows anything. If recognition is given to very few people, again, people don't learn really a lot. But when it's in the middle, then a lot of people learn a lot, and this treatment, the medium scarcity of recognition, is the treatment where you're more likely to observe a massive performance effect. And this is indeed the case. This is indeed the case. So what we see here, these are the estimates of the performance effects of recognition given to all, given to the best three, and given to the best one. So what we see here, interesting things. We see that even when you give recognition to all, it has a significant performance effect. How do we know it's significant? Look at this bar. It's all above zero. So this is the 95% confidence interval. It means it's statistically significant. So it's above zero. We say, oh, okay. Everybody receives recognition, people react positively to it. Can the theory of conformity to the norm explain this result? Can the theory of conformity explain this result? Do people in the all treatment, do people learn anything about their relative performance? No. Yeah?
No, they don't, but isn't it reciprocity?
It's reciprocity, exactly. It's reciprocity. The only mechanism that is going to generate positive, you know, not the only. There's also conditional altruism, but later on we'll see that it's not the case. Now, so best three, you have a higher treatment effect. Why? Because now recognition is more informative with respect to, you know, the relative position of people in the performance distribution. And when recognition becomes extremely scarce, not a lot of people learn a lot. So the effect is still positive, the effect is still significant, but it's less in magnitude than the effect for the best three. Okay, so recognition improves average performance, especially when it's not too common but not too rare. But what is really interesting here is, you know, if you want to attribute these performance effects to a particular theory, you have to look at the performance effects of recognition specifically, separately, for recipients and non-recipients of recognition. Because such theories as reciprocity, for instance, and conformity to the performance norm, they make separate predictions on the effect of recognition for the recipients and non-recipients of it. And these are average effects, so we can't distinguish between theories yet. Okay? This shows the effect separately for the recipients and non-recipients. And what you see is the recipients react positively when recognition is given to all. Of course, when recognition is given to all, everybody is a recipient. Now, when recognition is given to the best three, and you are among the best three, there is a positive performance response to it. However, it's not statistically significant. And no wonder, because there are going to be very few people who are the best three in their group. When you have recognition given to the best one, You are number one in terms of data entry in this experiment. Rejoice. Nothing happens. So this is a really drastic difference with the reaction of the recipients of recognition in this experiment as compared to Kosfeld and Neckermann. Why is this difference? Why do we see people at the top of the performance distribution working harder in Kosfeld and Neckermann and people at the top of the distribution working less hard in this later experiment? What makes the difference? Well, what makes a difference is that in Kosfeld and Neckermann, recognition was announced, and therefore it triggered status concerns, and therefore it triggered competitive behavior. And we know from the tournament model that when things are competitive, the relatively high ability people react the most. Here, recognition was unannounced, and so it couldn't have triggered competitive behavior. Therefore, the people at the top of the distribution, they got confirmed their hope that they were fulfilling the performance norm. They are, come on, you're the best in the group. You know, you could rest on your laurels. Looking at the non-recipients, in the control, nothing happens. Well, in the control, there are no recipients or non-recipients, but if you compare people at the bottom of the distribution who wouldn't have received recognition in the control group if they had been given, then they don't react. The non-recipients of recognition in the moderate recognition treatment react very highly, so they really, you know, you really see a huge increase in their performance. The non-recipients in the best one, in the scarce recognition, they learn a little bit about their relative performance, but not as much as the recipients, as the non-recipients in this treatment. Therefore, their performance response is not that high. It's positive, but not that high. So what can we learn? What can we learn from these results? What is the theory that explains performance differences in the effect of recognition between recipients and non-recipients? There are two such theories. One, reciprocity, and the other is conformity to the norm. Yeah? Now, do we see evidence for the reciprocity? Do we see any evidence for reciprocity? What do you think? Looking at this picture, give a diagnosis. Do we see any evidence for reciprocity? Kim? Reciprocity says if you receive recognition, you reciprocate by working harder. Do we see any evidence? Yes?
Yes, because the first and bar were TC all and reciprocate. Yes.
That's right. So here, you receive recognition, you reciprocate. Okay? Do we see evidence for conformity to performance norm? What would be the evidence for conformity to the performance norm? Do we see this evidence? Yes or no?
Yes, we can see it at the non-recipients.
That's right. The non-recipients respond more strongly than the recipients. Do we see evidence against conformity to the performance norm? Or not, shall we say, not consistent with conformity to the performance norm? That's a hard one. Do we or do we not? We do. These results are mixed. They are not as clear as one would like to. Because the pure theory of conformity to performance norm predicts these guys to respond negatively and these guys to respond positively. What you see is that these guys' response is just near zero and sometimes even positive. Whereas these guys' response is duly positive. So what appears to happen is that people's responses to recognition are shaped by two reasons. First is reciprocity, second is conformity. And for these, for the recipients of recognition, when recognition is not given to all, there what we observe here is the sum of the two forces. And these two forces are not significantly different from one another. They operate in the opposite directions. The reciprocity would have them to respond positively, but the conformity would have them respond negatively. But as a result, their response is sort of positive, but not statistically significant. So you have recognition working through both conformity to the performance norm as well as through reciprocity. Now, let us look at the formal argument behind beliefs update with recognition. So let's just do a simple Bayesian thing And see precisely, you know, without much hand waving, see precisely what's going on when you learn about being a recipient or non-recipient of recognition. So suppose that the norm, somehow people found out or people believe, it doesn't really matter where this norm comes from, but there exists a norm in the group that a performance, one's performance is considered to be within the norm if it's within the top 100 times eta percent of the distribution. So the eta between 0 and 1 is the norm parameter. The norm can be very high, which means low eta, or norm can be very low, which means high eta, right? All we want now is to say there is a norm, and not everybody will conform to the norm. That's why eta is less than 1. Okay, so the second ingredient into this simple model is, well, if you have absolutely no information, you haven't spoken to people, you haven't seen your relative performance rankings, you don't know, if you have absolutely no information about how well you're doing with respect to the rest of the group, you have a belief, you know, you have to have a belief. You have to have a sort of semi-rational reason, semi-rational belief that determines your choice of effort, right? You want to conform to the norm, you know what the norm is, but you don't know how good you are relative to the rest of the group in this setting, in this environment. So you have a belief that you fulfill the norm, which means that you are within the top percentile of the group, and this event happens with probability P. So you think, 50% chance that I am normal, that I fulfill the norm. 50% chance that I don't fulfill the norm. I care about fulfilling the norm, but then I also care about the costs of effort. So I bring my effort to the level where at which the marginal benefit of effort with respect to probability of fulfilling the norm are equal to the marginal cost of effort with respect to the, you know, with regards to the amount of physical and mental energy that it requires, that my performance requires of me. So your pre-recognition belief is P. Now, you observe that the recognition is given to a fraction rho of the group. So in Bradler, Durr, Neckermann, and Non experiment, there were groups of 8 people, and 3 of them received recognition. What is rho? What is equal? What rho is equal to? 3/8, right? So 37.5%. 3/8. So you have a you observe you're present, physically present in a room where 3 out of 8 people are recognized. What you learn is that if you are the recipient of recognition, if you are mentioned, then you learn, I belong to the rho, to the top rho times 100% of the group. Is it good or bad? It's good. And we will show that it's good, yeah? Because it gives you a signal. So suppose, let's consider 2 cases. The case that rho is greater than eta, which means that recognition is less selective than the norm. Say everybody wants to be top 10%, but recognition is given to top 37.5. What happens to the beliefs update of the recipients and non-recipients of recognition? Now, the recipients update their beliefs positively, but that's not very interesting. What is more interesting is what happens to non-recipients. Suppose you hear 3 out of 8 people being recognized and you're not one of them. What do you learn? If rho is larger than eta, or then you learn that if you don't belong to the top 37.5% of the group, then you surely don't belong to the top 20% of the group. So what is your post-recognition belief of fulfilling the norm? 0. Okay. So you thought with probability P you fulfilled the norm, you received you saw recognition, you were not among the recognized, you updated your beliefs from P to 0. Massive shock. You have a negative belief update, lower probability of fulfilling the norm than you thought before. If there is a lower probability of fulfilling the norm than you thought before, then you should really increase your effort in order to increase this probability. in order to, you know, maximize, increase your chances with this new information of actually fulfilling the norm. Okay? So, now, suppose that rho now is less than eta. So recognition is very scarce. It's less than the norm. So that the norm is you want to be top 20%, but recognition is given to top 10% or something like this. Yeah. So when recognition is more selective than the norm, all is not lost if you don't receive recognition. It's like Kim not receiving Nobel Prize for economics, right? So you could still be fulfilling the norm, but you know, you are not among the top rho times 100% of the group. Here is a typo. It has to be 100 times rho, not 100 times theta. Can you correct it? It's 100 times rho. Now, what is the post-recognition probability of fulfilling the norm? Let's do some Bayesian statistics here. So this is your percentile in the distribution. This is the probability density function of individual performances. Okay, so this is the mass of people in the top 1%, and this is the mass of people in the bottom 1% of the distribution. So let's say this is the norm, eta. So basically all these guys are fulfilling the norm, but they don't know it because they don't observe this distribution. And this is rho. And rho in this example is less than eta, so recognition is more selective. Now, given the fact that you are not here, given the fact that you don't belong here, what is the probability that your relative performance is still within the norm? Well, the conditional probability of being within the norm is the integral, is basically this area divided by the total of this area. So the probability of you being here means that you fulfill the norm, but you're not recognized. So what is the probability that you fulfill the norm given that you're not recognized is equal to this area divided by the total of this. To make things simple, let us assume that the distribution of relative performances is uniform. Not normal, uniform, right? If that's the case, then we get this simple formula. This is the conditional probability that you will not receive recognition, but fulfill the norm. You have this expression, okay? Now, what is the probability, the unconditional probability that you fulfill the norm? In the absence of any other information, the unconditional probability that you fulfill the norm is just P, is the probability which you thought was the case before. Now, what is the probability that you will not receive recognition? If recognition is given to a fraction rho of your group, what is the probability that you will not receive recognition? Rho. If the fraction rho is given recognition, then the fraction 1 minus rho is not given recognition, right? So the probability, the unconditional probability that you will not be given recognition is 1 minus rho. Make sense? Okay, so let's use bias. We want to find out the probability that you fulfill the norm given the observation that you don't receive recognition. How do we calculate it? We use the basic Wikipedia base rule formula. It's equal to the probability that you don't receive recognition even though you fulfill the norm times the unconditional probability of fulfilling the norm divided by the unconditional probability of receiving no recognition. Now, doing the maths, you calculate and you get this result. And this result tells you the post-recognition probability that the non-recipients of recognition actually fulfill the norm. Now, is this probability smaller or larger than the pre-recognition subjective probability of fulfilling the norm? To find out, you just have to take the difference between the post-recognition probability of fulfilling the norm and pre-recognition probability of fulfilling the norm, which after some simple calculation becomes this expression, which is clearly negative. So the non-recipients of recognition have a negative update of their beliefs of fulfilling the norm. How large is this update? How large is this update? The extent to which this update is, the magnitude of this update depends obviously on the parameters rho and eta. So eta is given. It's an exogenous parameter that measures people's ideas about what is considered normal. The default for eta is 50%. So if you are above the median, you are above the norm. If you are below the median, you are below the norm. But rho is not exogenous. Rho is set by the principle. And let us look at, you know, and as a practice question, you will be asked to find out the optimal level of recognition given the belief, given the norm, and show that this is this can't be very high or it can't be very low. If it's very low, if rho is very low, then Kim learns that she hasn't received her Nobel Prize. Does she care? Not very much. Because her belief of fulfilling the norm is not going to be updated by a very large amount. Rho is ridiculously small. This expression is close to zero. She doesn't care. But if for some reason, if through some other recognition, she learns that she is not in the top 20%, then this update, then rho becomes larger. So the numerator becomes larger. The denominator becomes smaller. This whole expression becomes larger. And Kim's beliefs are adjusted in a dramatic way so that she starts working a lot harder than before. But whatever rho and eta are, whatever values these parameters take, getting the bad news of not being recognized will always produce a negative update in people's beliefs about fulfilling the norm, and as a result, they will start working harder in order to increase the chances of fulfilling the norm in the future. So that's basically it. A couple of reflections from my own work on the effects of recognition on performance. Basically, the only claim to fame of this paper, in addition to the much more famous paper of Bradler and colleagues, is that this paper shows that recognition is not that ephemeral as people may be excused for thinking. They, you know, one criticism of this literature is to say, oh, come on, everything is about money, everything is about sex. So to get back to Mary Kay's saying that, you know, people value recognition and praise more than money and sex, well, that's not true. It is true, or at least some people do so, because if you consider an environment in which there are, by default, already very powerful incentives, even in this environment you will see weaker, but still not zero, effects of recognition. What are these environments? Any number of environments, you know, some busy financial services firms, where people hedge fund, where people receive a lot of incentives. Well, unfortunately, these guys don't want to talk to Nick about running a recognition experiment there. So I decided to do an experiment among the students whom I taught at Erasmus University in Rotterdam, first year microeconomics students. And they were divided into 15 groups, 15 tutorial groups, and in 8 of these groups recognition was given, and in the remaining 7 of these groups, no recognition was given. So the experimental design is very similar to Bradler and colleagues. What we have found, Nikki Hochfeld is actually a master student of mine, a very rare case of publishing papers with master students. What we found is that the recipients have not really reacted to recognition, which is consistent with Bradler and colleagues. What we have also found is that the non-recipients have reacted more strongly to recognition, which is again consistent with Bradler and colleagues. Unfortunately, none of these effects are significant. Why are they not significant? Because there are other incentives. These first-year guys had to pass their microeconomics exam as a must. If they didn't pass their microeconomics exam, they wouldn't be admitted to the second year of university studies. It's really a waste of time, really bad. So they all worked extremely hard to try and pass. And that's what I mean by very high-powered incentive environments, the first-year university environment. I don't know about Baden-Württemberg. Do you have to pass courses in the first year? See, you can probably you know, relate to this, yeah? So here is a funny experimenter coming in the room and doing some, you know, blah blah treatment, recognizing some people. Who cares that now that everybody has to pass the course? Well, some people care, especially people who just fell short of the recognition threshold, people whose performance was a little bit less than the minimum level starting from which recognition was given. They really increased their effort. Another group of people who increased their effort upon not receiving recognition were the people who were very interested in the course. They visited each and every tutorial, and yet they didn't receive recognition. Disappointed? No. They would work harder because it's extremely important for them. They are very interested in microeconomics, and yes, they do want to pass the exam. Everybody wants to pass the exam, but they actually are also interested in it. And this, the product of these groups, the people who are not too far from the recognition cutoff and the people who are interested in the course, they showed a massive increase in performance when they didn't receive recognition, as compared to the similar people from the same position in the distribution in the control group. So recognition works, and it works, of course, to a lesser extent, but still works in environments where there are other very powerful incentives present. So let us summarize today's lecture. Why am I so excited about recognition? Because recognition, if you do it wisely, you can increase people's performance without having to pay a lot of money for it. Recognition works, and it's relatively cheap. Well, come on. You know, let's not pretend we can build an efficient economy which would be based only on recognition. You know, we have to give people incentives. Recognition is not an answer to is not a long-term answer to the problem of lack of efficiency. Sorry. To the lack of efficiency in production, right? It's hard to imagine an incentive system built largely on recognition. To get back to our study with Hochfeld, Bradler and colleagues, they can't really say much about it because they had a one-off three-hour experiment. We observed our students for 1.5 months altogether. So we did register a significant effect of recognition on the second midterm exam, but we found no effect on the final exam. So the effects of recognition are fleeting. They are not very long run. They're not long term. But in a short term, they work. So perhaps the most interesting lesson from this whole business of recognition is that it's a very subtle instrument. It's cheap. It costs nothing. But it costs a lot of thinking and design if you want to achieve certain results with recognition alone. And why? Because there are three powerful mechanisms that are activated by recognition. And whether they activate it and to what extent they are activated depends on how you present recognition. If you announce recognition, it's all about status concerns. If it's about status concerns, the people at the top of the ability distribution respond to recognition most intensely. So if you want to increase the performance of the people at the top of your performance distribution, which you may not want to do, do recognition in the announced way. However, If you want to improve the performance of the employees in your organization who are not the top performers, but who are not the most hopeless people in your firm, you could do better by doing unannounced recognition. Does unannounced recognition happen? It happens all the time. We live in a society which always constantly recognizes its members. We say well done to people. We have all sorts of prizes. Okay, this is announced recognition, but you know, just saying well done or ostracizing people or criticizing people are forms of either positive or negative recognition which are not really announced. And you know, one way to think about these ways of giving recognition is simply, you know, as a sort of currency of or element of an etiquette which doesn't have behavioral implications, I think would be reducing the phenomenon of recognition and simplifying it quite a lot. Spontaneous, unannounced recognition does have performance effect, and we have seen these effects in experimental studies. So the lesson for personnel managers is that you should use recognition. The way you use recognition depends on who you want to motivate. Top people use announced recognition. People in the middle try unannounced recognition. But then, you know, at the end of the day, as I said, you can't really have a society, you can't have an economy based on recognition alone. Not only because the effects of recognition are not long, are short-lived. We simply don't know whether there are long-term effects of recognition or not. But also, to the extent to which recognition, unannounced recognition works, what is the reason why unannounced recognition works? The reason why unannounced recognition works is because unannounced recognition gives you coarse feedback, gives you imperfect, feedback about your performance. If it's the only reason, why don't you give precise feedback about your performance and thus motivate people? And yes, you do receive a lot of feedback, you know. As students of University of Constance, you can look up your relative performance, I believe, using Ilias. I can look up my relative performance in terms of student evaluations, not that I want to, but, you know, I don't need being recognized or not recognized for learning about it. But in some situations, when access to this information is limited, recognition works. Okay, the last slide of today's lecture is practice questions. So there are four practice questions. I would encourage you to do them all. So start with the tournament model. Just get the slides from Personnel 1, either from your own collection or download from Ilias, and work, show that higher ability, lower effort costs individuals will put in more effort to attain recognition. Now, replicate the analysis that we did on these two slides, the Bayesian update. Replicate the analysis for the recipients of recognition. We did the non-recipients do at home, try at home the recipients of recognition and see how they update their beliefs. What is the optimal share of people to be given recognition as a function of the norm? Very simple, straightforward, and yet insightful exercise. Just maximize the beliefs update with respect to rho given eta, get an expression of rho as a function of eta, and comment. Finally, here is a question that asks you to imagine two situations. In one situation, there is a group whose members don't yet know each other very well. And in the other, there is a more mature group where people probably know each other a lot better and they know their relative position in the group. The very simple question is, all else equal, which group will react more strongly to unannounced recognition? The new group or the more mature group, and why? So, that's it for today. Thank you very much and see you next week.